The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Fellow auto detailers, welcome to the show that features interviews with today's most successful auto detailers. This is the Auto Detailing Podcast. Here's your host, Jimbo Balaam.
I want to thank today's sponsor, the Better Software Company. I'm starting to get a lot of feedback from you who have tested out the free trial and actually signed up with the Better Software Company, and you're realizing all the benefits that I talk about are really true and amazing. So definitely check them out, thebettersoftwarecompany.com. Tell them Jimbo sent you. Inventory management, employee management, customer management, customer relationship management, all those good things can be done within one place. And that's really the main idea I want to get across, is there's a ton of ways that you can keep track of your customers, what details they're purchasing and all that. But to have all that in one hub is really important because it saves you a ton of time, ton of effort, and a ton of energy. And so that's what they can offer you for a really small monthly fee that is really not a big deal. So check out thebettersoftwarecompany.com. Tell them Jimbo sent you, and they're going to give you a free demo.
All right. We are here with Richard Umbrell, the founder, CEO. I guess I didn't even ask you the official title.
President, CEO.
President, CEO.
Founder.
Founder. Chief do-everything, probably.
Yeah, started from the ground up.
Started from the ground up of Buff & Shine Performance Products. And I didn't even tell you this before we started recording, but you guys have my favorite window cleaning towel.
Oh, really?
Which I know isn't
yeah, those are great.
Really your specialty, but I can't find them anywhere except for I get them from Coats.
Right. Okay.
But anyway, thanks for taking the time. We're sitting in your conference room here at the headquarters, the mothership, where everything's made, and that's exciting. And I can't wait to get in to talk about your pads and the new pads that you have coming out, especially the ones that are sitting in front of us. And this episode, as we talked about, is going to be going live the week of SEMA. And you guys have a booth at SEMA, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So do you know the booth number off the top of your head?
Yeah, it's 12573.
12573. So if you're at SEMA listening to this on your way to SEMA, make sure you stop by and check out their booth and all they have to offer. But before we get into the pads, why don't we talk about how you started this company, why you started this company, what did you do, what were you doing professionally that led into starting this company?
Well, I started this company when I was 18 years old, right out of high school.
Oh, wow.
I grew up in a family that had a car wash chemical manufacturing business. So as a teenager, I used to ride with my dad in his truck because he drove route trucks. He had about seven or eight trucks that would go to car washes. So in the summertime, I used to go with him, and I was around the detailing chemicals that they manufactured. They also had an automotive paint store, and they had a paint booth that people would come and rent. So I used to paint things. I learned about making automotive paint, how you mix it, plus the detailing end. So I had, growing up as a kid, that was like all around our family. Then as I got to, 18 years old, you're graduating high school. I wasn't a kid that was into books. I wasn't going to college. I thought maybe I'd be running my parents' business, but my dad said basically that you can't come in and be the king. If you want to have your own business, which is the path he wanted me to go on, he said you basically have to build it from the ground up by yourself to understand every level of the business. If you come in and take over, you won't understand. You'll probably have the company out of business in a couple of years. So he said that he thought that the buffing pad business was a business that there weren't very many companies doing a very good job.
And what year is this?
It's 1988.
Okay.
1987, 1988.
Okay.
So I didn't know anything about making buffing pads, and but the industry seemed that the quality wasn't there, according to my father. And so,
and he knew that because he had his, he was in all these different shops.
He was in all these different body shops selling products, selling paint, know, selling car detailing supplies. Mm-hmm. So, my father's a very mechanical guy. So growing up, he had like every power tool, welders, all kinds of equipment for, you know, he would build stuff all the time. So I was always his helper and I learned a tremendous amount of information from this guy. And so wanting to go into the buffing pad business, you can't buy the machines to make pads. There's no machines you can buy. You have to build them. So we took a look at all the competitive products and we tried to figure out how to build some equipment. And, you know, took 6 months to a year before I had a first product of custom made machines to make wool pads. Wow. And this goes back in time before there was Velcro. This is, goes back to the bolt on. Wow. So when I first started, it was bolt on. And then a few years later, Velcro attachment came out for wool pads.
Oh, wow.
And there wasn't even foam at that time. But there's a number of steps in making the pads, and you have to develop those steps. You have to develop the machines. So I tried to make a better product and better quality, you know, than anything that was out on the market. And
how many companies at that time were making pads that you knew of?
Probably about four
okay.
or five.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Four or five. So one thing led to another. One product led to another. And, you know, I just worked really hard, and pretty soon I had, you know, for today we have probably 600, 700 products.
Wow.
Different variations of pads and foam. And I would say that 75% of the equipment in our plant is made by me with my own hands and developed over the years to develop the processes to build these things, because there is not a company that will just deliver you that machine.
Right.
So it's not only, you know, understanding how the pads need to be manufactured, it's also understanding how they have to be used. So that my early years taught me a lot about buffing and detailing and all the chemicals and how these things are used. So
even though your dad didn't want to hand over his business to you, when you started making these pads, did he allow you to sell them or have his customers test the pads
that,
for you?
That, yes, he would give them to his customers to try them.
Okay.
And he would have his weekly route, so he would, you know, drop it off on Monday, the next Monday he'd get it back. Hey, this broke, this fell apart, fix it. So I had a good place to test the product.
Okay.
And the other thing is, my parents didn't just hand me a bucket of cash. Either.
Right.
They said, you know, we're just going to give you a little bit of money. You have to do all the work. We're not doing any of the work. So I just took the ball and ran and, you know, pushed it as hard as I could to build a quality product that was very durable. And one thing with buffing pads is the detailers, there's all different levels of education out there. Mm-hmm. And the more educated guys take care of their pads better, the less educated guys don't. And the pads get torn up real easy. So you kind of need to build a product that is durable for everybody.
Right.
And that's what we focus on. We want to make it stronger than it needs to be so that it holds up in all situations. And that seems to be kind of the secret of our success, is to have high quality at a fair price and you know, use the best glues we can get, use the best Velcro materials, use the best foams, and never put a product out in the market before it's time.
Right.
If you're not ready, don't put it out.
Right.
It'll just come back to bite you.
When did you know, kind of in the early days, that it was, that you actually had, there was substance to this thing, this business that you were creating? Do you remember when, like, did you have a big order? You know, you're getting all this testing coming in from your dad's customers, and then did you have, like, a big order or someone call and say, man, these are the best pads we've ever tried, they don't fall apart, blah, blah, blah? Was there a specific moment that you knew, okay, this is not just a cool idea, but this is a thing that I can grow?
Well, I think when, you know, being 19, 18 years old, and I had some products that were really high quality, and I took them out into the market, and I was knocking out competitors that have been in the business for 20 years.
Right.
That was satisfying for me to see those customers test those pads, look at our cost, look at our quality, and give me the order. Whether it was a big customer or a small customer, it was like, you know, scoring a touchdown or something.
Right, right.
When you leave the account, they're like so excited because they, you know, they like the product better than they have. They want to get it in the market, and it's mine. It's something I built with my hands.
Right. Yeah. Were you building it in the garage?
I started in actually in my parents' garage with a little bit of, you know, equipment that I built, and then I moved into a small space inside my parents' building actually in the very beginning, and then I was making some product for them, and then I wanted to get out into the market to sell to other people, and I need my own location, so I ended up renting a building in Torrance.
Okay.
Which was many years ago, but that's where I started.
Nice.
So it just gave me a place to operate and, you know, keep inventory. And
And so at that time, you were still running the business, but also making everything yourself too?
Oh, I had about three employees right there in the very beginning.
Okay, wow, nice.
So, yeah, the very first pads were made with these hands, but I got started.
You quickly figured out this isn't going to work.
Right.
And then, okay, so back in the late 80s, early 90s then, or I guess it'd be early 90s by then, is it just wool pads that you're making, or when did you start making foam pads or different types of pads?
Well, back then there was the cutting pads, the, you know, twisted wool, white, and then there was a yellow twisted wool cutting pad, mm-hmm. and then there was the knitted wools, which were back then were yellow. They're about 1.5-inch pile. There was probably maybe 10, 15 part numbers back then. There was different variations of wool, but there was no foam. Foam was not popular at that point. So foam started in, I would say, the mid-90s, 94, 95, in that time. And at that time, we actually outsourced that manufacturing because I didn't know anything about foam.
Mm.
But today, we don't do that. Quickly, I learned that when you outsource everything, you can't control the quality of the product. Yeah. You have no control over what glues are using, what materials are using. So I just decided right off that this is crazy because I'm putting my name on these products and I don't want that somebody else's work on it. If it leaves this building, it was made in this building by us, and we've selected all the materials, all the glues, all the Velcros, everything, the foam, and we're very particular about what we use in the product, and we will not change if we know something's good. If the cost goes up, I keep it in the product because I know it's a solid material. And I think that's another key to the success of the company is managing the raw material quality and where your vendors are and having all that in-house, you know, having all the machines. If something's off spec, I can go in the back and tweak the machine instead of making the phone call to a vendor and hope he remembers next time.
Right. But that's a huge commitment on your end to bring everything in-house too, you know. And yeah, it's nice once you have everything set up to be able to change little things, but that's quite a commitment to say, hey, we're going to make everything in-house.
Well, we want to be the best company that we can be. It's personal pride of mine to make sure that the products are good. I don't like complaints. I want quality. I push my people. I train my people to do a good job so that, you know, they know how to make the product and it's repeatable. That's the key. It's got to be repeatable. You got to open that bag and see that pad and it looks the same every time. That's hard to do. You can never do it if you're outsourcing. It's impossible.
Right, yeah.
So it is a big commitment. But
yeah. Did you ever think you would be so passionate about buffing pads?
I
was it something that just kind of like all of a sudden was just like you were doing it and passionate about it, and then you look back one day and you're like, man, I never thought I'd be so passionate about a buffing pad. Or you know, because it's – I love it. I think it's awesome. You know, but it's kind of random, I guess, you know, like a pad,
right.
You know, it's not random. That's the wrong word. But did you ever think you would be so passionate about the the foam and the glue and the whole process of making a product?
Well, I think it's just a personality thing that I like to do things right. I like to make things right. I like to take care of my customers. I like to make good products. I like to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me feel good to do a good job. So I think it's just a personality thing. It's
just who you are.
I think just who I am. I mean, I try my best to do the best I can.
Nice. So what was, do you remember the first few foam pads you made or when did you start to realize, okay, we need to start bringing foam pad, we need to start focusing on foam pads?
Well, in the early days, the foam was, a lot of it was made out of cheap, almost like seat cushion foam. People thought foam was foam. It's just
foam is
foam, and any foam will buff a car. And so there wasn't anybody making foam for buffing. So they reached into other industries like the filtering industry and brought that foam into the buffing pad market, because in the filtering industry, the they blow air through the foam, and the pores in the foam are different sizes, so it kind of gives you a grit. Like, you know, you have 50 PPI all the way to 80 and 100.
Okay.
So they were pulling those foams and using them for buffing because it kind of gave you a grit scale. They have some durability to them. If they're reticulated, they're stronger, so that if you hit something, it doesn't rip the foam really fast.
Okay.
So that was in the early days. Those were the only foams available. So over time, though, the manufacturers of the raw material, the foam that when we buy foam, it comes in these big blocks. The people that we buy it from started to realize that there was an industry growing here that they wanted to get involved in, and so they started trying to make better foam for us. And we would tell them, well, we want the foam not to rip easy. We want it to be firmer. We want the cell size like this. We need the color like this. And so the foams have gotten considerably better. I mean, 100 times better than they were in the early days. And with all the amount of machines that are on the market today, foam is becoming very machine specific, which is confusing for the end users to know. They look at my catalog and they see all these colors and which foam do I use? Well, it really is becoming machine specific because the machines are your rotary machines don't put as much pressure on the foam as a long throw machine just tears the foam up. So there's a lot of foams that were made for that worked well like on a porter cable with a smaller stroke and put it on a long stroke and the foam blows up and people say, well, this foam pad's no good, and well, that foam pad wasn't engineered for that machine. And so you have to develop your products around the machines. That's what we're doing now because you have people that, well, I bought this polisher and I really like it and I'm not going to throw it away and buy a new one. So you have to build the foam pads to fit those machines for their application.
Wow. So is that going to – so, well, do you think it'll get to where it's like instead of just having a cutting pad for a DA, whatever, it'll actually be a Rupes 15 mil cutting pad, or you know, will the pads not be as universal? That's what you're saying. So maybe a pad that works on a 15 mil throw won't work on a 21.
No, I think it will. I think what you're going to see is what I'm seeing in the market for a few years now, or probably 3 or 4 years, is a transition from rotary to long throw, and that as the generation clears out, there's going to be more people on the long throw. It's better. It's just better all the way around. So many benefits. So I think the pads will settle more to a larger percentage being long throw pads.
Okay.
And some of these other machines will not be purchased again, and they'll just disappear from the market. So right now we're in the middle of the transition.
Right.
So for a manufacturer like me, it's difficult because I got to make this for this guy and this for this guy. But as the generations clear out, and time goes on, people won't buy those other machines, and I would say that every detailer is going to have a long throw machine.
Yeah.
Once he uses it once, he might throw his old machine away.
Yeah, but it's interesting. It's an interesting debate. What has to be different in the foam for a I know the machines are different, but say a foam pad for a rotary, how does that foam need to be different than foam on a long stroke machine? Or is it not the foam, is it the glue and all the other components that make up the pad?
Well, on the rotary machine, there's not nearly as much heat, and there's not the side loading. The stress level on the foam is not the same.
Okay.
On the long throw machines, you're creating a lot of heat. There's so much stress from the movement, you know, left to right, that you're creating a lot of heat, and the glues have to be different. The foam quality has to be superior. You have to look like there's a lot of specs on foam. One of them is like elongation.
Okay.
It's how long the foam will stretch before it rips.
Okay.
So when we have all these specs and we're trying to make foam pads for a long throw machine, you want to have the high long elongation.
Okay.
And these are numbers that you wouldn't make sense to you if you looked at them, but we know what they are. And if you have the higher numbers, the foam will stretch more. Another thing is a lot of the foams you're seeing now are getting thinner.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is generally foam pads for the orbital type machines are 1 inch thick. But when you get into these long throw machines, the stress on the foam, because on a 1-inch thickness, it sways back and forth so hard, and people press down, that you create a point in the middle of the foam where it's just stressing so hard that the foam pad can sometimes split in half. You've probably seen pictures of foam pads where you've got half inch of foam with Velcro and the other half inch of foam, and you're like, how does that happen? Well, if you thin the foam down, the foam can't torque as much left to right.
Right.
So you're not creating that hot spot in the center of the foam for it to split at some point. And if you have a foam that's got a lower elongation number, it can't handle that stress. But you take
so the lower the number, the less it'll stretch, or the more it'll stretch?
Well, the higher the number, it's like a percentage.
Okay.
So if you stretch it, some of the foams will say you can stretch it 100%.
Okay.
But it won't break. So you want a higher percentage of stretch.
Okay.
But all the pads that we're putting out in, you know, for long throws, they're in the higher scale of
the. Does that make the raw material more expensive the more it'll stretch, or not necessarily?
Well, it's more of a premium product for sure.
Okay.
Yes, it is more of a premium product, and then you start to lose vendors. Some of them can't do it. The raw material suppliers that we have.
Got it.
They don't have the technology to do it.
Is there any way for an end user to, just by feeling the foam or I was going to say smell it, but is there any way for the end user, or say they're looking at different pads and they want to make sure they're buying the best quality pad they can. Is there any way for them to tell the difference in just squeezing it or feeling it or anything like that, or not really?
Well, you can tell by, I mean, the first thing I do when I get a foam sample from a vendor is I pull on it just to see how much it moves.
Okay.
And the feel sometimes, if the foam has a drier feel to it compared to what we call it a moister feel, which is like we have an orange foam, which you've probably seen, our pre-polymer foam, and it has a smoother, slicker feel to it. It has more elongation, but then if you get into some of the older, like, rotary foams, they have a more of a dry feel to the foam.
Okay.
Might be too technical for some people to understand.
No, but I'm just trying to give an idea of...
It's not... I mean, the best way is, like, we have charts that show the foams, like, on our catalog and our website.
Okay.
That will show you the different...
Perfect.
Different grades.
Okay.
And so when you get... Like, we have the Eurotech foam pads, and we have the Eurocell foam pads. Those are more of a pre-polymer foam, which is a stronger foam.
Okay.
Which is, we're recommending them for long throw machines.
Okay.
Or orbital machines. Some of them you can use on a rotary if you wanted to.
Uh-huh.
But they're probably overbuilt for the rotary.
Get
away with, because remember, the pre-polymer and the stronger foams are more money.
Right.
So if you have a rotary, you can get away with more of the standard, we call them American foams or U.S. foams.
Okay.
Which are those old style filter foams.
Got it.
Which are strong, and you put them on a rotary, they're not going to blow up. They're going to do a good job, give you a nice finish.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put them on a long throw machine, it's going to get too hot and the foam's going to collapse.
Got it.
So you want to go with the pre-polymers, which are the Eurotech line and the Eurocell.
Okay.
And there's differences in those two lines too. The Eurocell foams are, the cells are more closed.
Okay.
So when you use those, you're not getting the airflow that you need, but you're keeping the polish on the surface.
So that's a term, I want to go back to that real quick, because that's a term that gets thrown around a lot, and I'd never hear anyone clarifying what that means as far as closed cell or open cell.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just talk a little bit about, just make it like real layman terms, it doesn't need to be too technical, but what is the difference between a closed cell and open cell, and what does that mean for the end user?
Okay, well, most of the foam pads in our line, and most of the foam pads out there that are used for buffing, are open celled. And when they make foam, when it's finished, they put it in a machine called a reticulator. It's a chamber. They put it inside. They close the doors. It's steel chamber, a very strong machine. And they pump gas into the chamber with the foam, and then they ignite the gas. It's an explosion, actually. And what it does is the gas goes into the holes of the foam, and it blows the cells open. So the cells are more open. So then when you get into buffing and you have an open-celled foam, the air is able to travel through the foam.
Okay.
But also, one of the negatives is if you use a liquid, it goes into the foam.
Right.
So your pad gets heavy. You're like, I just put a whole bunch of liquid down, it's gone.
Okay.
So if you get into a closed-celled foam, there are some, in the past, the closed-celled foams weren't very strong. Because
okay.
when you do the reticulation process, it makes the foam stronger. It beefs up the quality.
So you're doing that. You're doing that process, the explosion process,
right.
regardless of if it's open or closed cell.
Well, if it's close, it's closed celled, and then you open it by reticulating it.
Got it.
Okay.
Okay.
So if you reticulate it and the cells are open now, that reticulation process made the foam stronger.
Like, okay.
Huge difference in strength. So if you hit something, foam doesn't rip. The abrading on the surface doesn't, the foam's not crumbling really fast on you.
Okay.
So, but now if you get a foam that is closed cell, there's some newer products out, which is what's in our Eurocell line.
Okay.
The foam is closed cell, but the chemistry behind it is, it's stronger, so it doesn't rip.
Okay.
It's really strong. But you don't get the airflow through it, so you have to be careful not to get it too hot.
Okay.
But the benefit is, the polish doesn't absorb all the way through the pad really fast. So you have to have a little bit more technical skills to training, I guess, to know that I can't let this pad heat up because if I get it too hot, it's just going to melt.
And
it's not going to be good for you. But there's people have a lot of success with it, and they're like, I'm not using as much polish. I'm getting a finish. Because if you put the polish on the foam and you put the buffer down and everything goes in, your material's not cutting.
Right.
If you can keep it down on the car, you're gonna get a quicker cut.
Okay.
But maybe you don't need to heat it up as much. This is the balance you have to figure out.
Right.
And some people really like it. They're like they just tell us, hey, this thing cuts amazing because my polish is staying on the surface, not all on the foam.
Okay.
I'm not using as much material, this stuff's expensive.
Okay.
So there's benefits there. You just can't overheat it.
Okay. That makes a ton of sense. So is the technology moving more towards a closed cell pad, or is there still room for both open cell and closed cell?
Well, it's there's so much personal preference out there that it's very difficult to
Got
say
it.
That it's going one way or the other.
Okay,
you know, one guy will love this system, one guy will love that. As a manufacturer, we want to make what people want.
Sure.
We want to give them options, and so we have both.
Okay,
we try to fill, you know, whatever customers
want. Right. Whatever
way.
You want, you'll make
right.
it
right.
for the most part. So let's talk about what you're going to be releasing at SEMA. Or what are you going to be, what have you guys been working on that you're going to showcase for everyone to see at? What was the booth number again?
It is 12573.
12573. So what are you going to be showcasing at SEMA this week?
we're going to be launching a new line of 1-inch, 2-inch, and 3-inch foam pads.
Awesome.
That are out of the Eurocell line.
Okay.
The Eurotech line.
Which is the open cell?
Okay. Right.
Got it.
Which is primarily what's used out there, open cell.
Okay.
So the Eurocell is the closed cell line.
Okay.
Which is, there are people that like it, but it's less of a seller than the open cell product.
There. Okay.
So we're going to be launching those in 1-inch, 2-inch, and 3-inch.
Oh, wow.
In four grades, so we have
awesome.
Coarse to fine, and those are the you know, pre-polymer heavy duty foams, high quality. So we're staying away from the old style filter foams,
okay,
which you could probably get away with on the small pads because there's not as much of abuse as there is on the large pads,
right?
We just want to have like the premium
premium
product offering.
Yep.
And then we're going to be offering out a new microfiber product, which has been developed over the past, I would say, 3 to 4 months, based on...
There's nothing else like this I've seen on the market currently. Am I correct in saying that?
No, this is very unique.
Okay.
This is all for the long throw equipment, which is so abusive on the foams and the Velcro and the glues. So we put, you know, all our experience that we've had over the years into this product, and I've got the best foam, I've got the best microfiber I can find, I've got the best Velcro, I've got the glues that we use are very, very expensive, but they're heat resistant, they're chemical resistant. You cannot reheat this glue, so you can melt that pad to burn it up.
And it'll never separate.
The glue does not come off if it's applied correctly. And we spent a lot of time and a lot of money on the equipment to apply that. But glues are tricky because there are inexpensive glues that you can buy to put the product together and it looks good in the bag and it'll work for a while. Mm. But if you need to heat that thing up, you want to wash it, you want to beat it, you have to really do your homework on the adhesive. And that's a big secret that we've worked out on the glues.
Okay. So what we're looking at is a microfiber pad. Would this be a microfiber cutting pad?
It's a cutting pad. Okay.
So a cutting pad. And the one I got had the nap was a little bit shorter, almost like a finishing pad. And so I guess it was similar to this, but it seemed to me, and correct me where I'm wrong, please. But so it's a thin microfiber cutting pad, but the fibers seem to be a little bit shorter, like a finishing pad.
Right.
Am I right in that? Or
they
am
are
I
shorter. Okay. They are shorter. The shorter, the more aggressive it's going to
okay.
get.
Okay. But the thing I think is cool, and the thing, other than the features you mentioned with the glue and stuff, is it's not just all white. It's a
right.
So it's a blended microfiber cutting
right.
pad. Because I've
right.
seen the all black,
right.
and I've seen the all white, but this is the Oreo cookie.
The Oreo cookie, correct, yeah. That's the name for it. Well, we're just trying to, you know, make a name for ourselves and not duplicate things that are
sure.
in the market and have something that's unique.
Okay.
And that people can identify with quickly.
Okay.
It's not a copy. I mean, this is
yeah.
This is by far the most durable one you're going to find.
Yeah, this is. I was telling Julio, I've tested it out a little bit, and this I've got it to take out 1500 grit sanding marks in
right.
two passes, on a lower speed on a 15
mm-hmm.
mil throw, and I think it's a game changer.
Yeah,
I really, really, really like it. Really like it. Is there a, other than aesthetically speaking, is there any other benefits to why you didn't make it just all white or all one color? Or why'd you go white and black and not green and yellow or red and yellow?
Well, the blend of the white and the blend of the black are different material. Like
okay.
The white strand is a different material than the black one. And we wanted to have something that was different than what's in the market that people could identify with. If we had made that in black, people would see our other black one.
Sure.
And this is the same material. We want them to know
okay.
that it's a different blend of material and easily identified with our company, not a copy of a white. There's a million white
right.
microfibers, like a white towel now.
Yeah,
one.
Yeah, you never know what
right.
who's making it or whatever. Okay, cool. Wow. What else do you want to talk about with this pad specifically, the blended? Is it being called the blended microfiber pad?
We're gonna call it the Eurofiber.
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 Okay.
Just the durability is the key.
Okay.
You know, I know it cuts. I know the materials. I've worked with these things for years and years. So I just put everything that I am into that product.
Okay.
To get it to
this
be
is your
the,
new
the
baby.
Best. Yes. Because they're with the long throw machines. If you take like our older style, our orange with black.
Yep.
And you take our black. Foam pad with black microfiber, those
mm-hmm.
two. Those are really built for an orbital, like a Porter Cable type
okay.
machine. They were not designed to go on a long throw machine. And if you go back to what we were talking about earlier
yep.
about the thicker the foam is
mm-hmm.
on the long throw machine,
right.
you're going to stress that foam too much with the torque. So you have to be short. You have to have a thinner foam so it
okay.
can't stretch as much. But on top of that, that foam that is in there, that white foam, is the strongest elongation foam I can find
wow.
available. So that I know the specs on it are awesome. So you put it on a long throw machine and it's just going to be, it's like a tank. I know it's like a tank.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys are going to find out when they start using them.
Yeah.
And they're going to realize that, hey, this thing, the foam's not ripping.
Right.
Because generally, some of the backing plates that are in the market now, they overhooked too hard.
Okay.
And so when you pull the pad off, you
right.
end up tearing the foam.
Right.
And so I know that's one of those things that I keep in my mind. Anytime I see a problem,
mm-hmm.
I try to, like, how do I incorporate that into my
right.
product? Because even if we don't advertise it, I know the guy in the shop
is going to
sees that and goes, hey, that pad doesn't rip.
Right.
And that's the kind of product I want to put out. I want them to come back to me just because
right.
they remember the quality.
Can you use these on a rotary?
You can. I don't. I'm done with the rotary. Like
okay.
When I was a teenager,
right.
that was it. There was
yeah.
rotary. There was no port cable.
Right.
Really. You know, I liked the orbitals, but they vibrate so bad
sure.
that it was annoying to hold on to.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stand it. But now with the long throw machines, I just think right. that's the way to go. I think that's the wave of the future, and it's the right thing.
Are you guys releasing any other things at SEMA?
We're also going to release these in one-inch, the microfiber.
Oh, cool.
A two-inch, okay. one-inch, along with the foam pads.
Oh, wow. Okay,
so
awesome.
So we have a brand-new high-end yeah. microfiber pad line and
yeah.
the one-inch, two-inch, and three-inch.
Okay. Very cool. Do you want to take some questions from Facebook? Totally off the cuff. If you can just nod, if you can't answer it, because I know there's a lot of things that you can't talk about, and everyone understands that. But I put it out there that I was coming here today. So some people ask some questions. If you don't want to answer it, just we'll move right along. No worries. Kenny asks, what's the best way to clean a pad?
Well, the best way, it depends. You have wool pads and foam pads
okay.
and microfiber pads.
Sure.
Wool pads, you need to use a spur and keep them dry. You don't want them to get oversaturated. They
okay.
get too loaded up. With wool, if you wash wool shrinks, and if you throw it in a washing machine, it'll knot up because it's just the characteristics of wool.
Okay.
So the best way to wash it is actually to use the spur.
Okay.
And if you want to put water on it, you can use a pad cleaning machine. You can soak it in water, let it dry out, you know, spur it a little bit, let it dry on the rack.
Okay.
That's a good way to clean it. You know, you could use a little bit of soap, but you don't really want to throw it in the washing machine.
Okay.
Not that the backing structure can handle it. It's built that way. It's built to be washable in a machine. But the wool, when you have 100% wool, it's just it felt so it's just going to turn into a brick. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it comes to the foam pads, you can use a pad washer again, or you can just wring them out in the sink with you
okay.
know, warm water and maybe a light detergent.
Mm-hmm.
When you're using microfiber, you need to use a brush and keep it clean because it
okay.
will mat up. So
yeah.
you need to use a brush to clean off any
okay.
residue that's built up on the surface. With these microfibers, you can wash them. You can throw them in a washing machine. You can throw our foam pads in a washing machine. All the adhesives we use
uh-huh.
are fully washable
okay.
on all the pads. So that's my suggestions. And
awesome.
A clean pad gets you a clean finish. If you let the pads get dirty,
yep.
you're just making a mess for yourself.
Okay, great answer. Dan Smith says, what's the best backing plates for microfiber pads?
The best backing plates. There are so many backing plates to choose from. Again, it comes down to personal preference.
Okay.
I like the thick backing plates that that are more squishy, soft,
okay.
more forgiving. I don't like this is my personal opinion.
Yeah.
I don't like it when the urethane on the backing plates are too hard.
Okay.
I like it when they have a little bit of give to them.
Okay.
There's also in backing plates, you get into what type of hook is on the backing plate. And if you get the wrong kind of hook that overhooks the loop on the pad
mm-hmm.
and you pull it off, every
right.
time you pull it off, the loops on the buffing pad break.
Okay.
So the more times you peel,
yep.
the more times the loops break. So there's thousands of loops. So if you pull it 50 times, you're wearing the pad out
mm-hmm.
if the hook on the backing plate is too aggressive.
Okay.
So you have to use a hook that's more forgiving, it's flexible. So the hook goes into the loop, and when you pull it off, the hook actually flexes away.
Okay.
So that it doesn't rip as much of the loop.
Got it.
There are some hooks that are out there that now, because of the long throw machines, have so much side action sliding that will engage better and not let the two surfaces slide together. Because if the hook and the loop are deteriorating each other,
mm-hmm.
Then you start wearing out the loop on the pad, and then the pad flies off.
Okay.
Because you've seen pads where you take it off and you notice that there's like a burn mark
yeah.
in the Velcro
yes.
on the pad.
Yes.
That's because it got pulled on and off so many times that it started slipping. Or the
Interesting.
Two, like they're male and female kind of connections.
Yep.
So if you get a backing plate, like a imported backing plate,
sure.
you might just put garbage
right.
hook on it. And it doesn't really engage the loop right. It slides.
Okay.
So you can't see it because the machine's going so fast.
Right.
But then all of a sudden you're like, why is my Velcro wearing out? Well, I didn't have, like a good spec'd in backing plate. Like when you go to a reputable manufacturer, to get your backing plates.
Like Buff and Chime?
Well, yes, exactly. you know, like they know what they're putting on there is going to hold up
okay. In
the product if you just get some no-name brand.
Right. That's why I see some guys will post those pictures and their pad just went flying off.
Right.
That's what's going on, what you just talked about.
Right. And another thing, too, people probably don't think about this, but backing plate doesn't last forever. There are hooks on there, and they do wear out over time. So if they don't engage the loop on the pad good, it'll slip and it'll wear out your pads.
Okay.
So you'll be wearing out pads, and you're like, why are these pads wearing out? Well, your backing plate is
done.
The hooks are done.
Okay. Interesting. Steven says, will their microfiber pads get thinner? Please say yes. This is pretty dang thin.
That's pretty thin.
Granted, he doesn't know about this yet.
Right.
But this is pretty thin.
Yeah.
Can it get any thinner than this?
That's 3/8. You could go to 1/4 inch, but you do need some thickness.
Right.
So you don't want to be.
Yeah. Would it be of any benefit to go thinner than this?
No, I don't think so.
Maybe he's talking about the nap. Even.
No, I think he's talking about the foam.
Talking about the foam.
We're known for the thicker ones at this point.
Okay. So this is your thinnest.
Yes.
Pet. Okay. Got it. Well, he'll be happy. I'm not going to respond to him on Facebook, but he'll get it. Let's see here. You probably don't want to answer this one. What type of polish compounds work best with each pad? We'll just ignore that one. Okay, so Donta asked, and he's machine specific, but maybe we can just generalize it. What's the best pad style for a Griot 6-inch? With 5-inch backing plate, but that's a little specific, so maybe we could just, that's kind of a loaded question too. What's the best pad?
Yeah.
It depends what you're doing, right?
It depends on the application.
Too many variables there. Trevor, this is an interesting question. Which color works for what purposes?
Well, that's a difficult one because you got to realize that we don't make polishes,
right?
So we make pads that go with polishes, but we have such a selection,
right,
that we have everything, but it really has to be tested.
Okay.
And you have to take a polish, and you know, if we're selling to a polish manufacturer or buffing pads, they will give them a sampling of products, and we'll say we think this is the cutting foam and this is the finishing foam and this is this foam. And then they'll come back and say, well, with this product, it doesn't work, but with this product, it works great. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like you have to marry up the foams with the polishes.
Okay.
So I've seen a foam pad do wonderful with this polish and terrible
right.
with that polish.
Okay.
And so it's half the equation is the polish.
Right.
It's not just the pad. So
okay.
What I have to do as a manufacturer is make the foam strong. Make the different grits in the foam, get them coarse,
got
medium,
it.
Fine. And then with the colors, there is no color scheme industry standard.
Right.
It's just, so that's a bit confusing for people. But if they were all the same color, it would be way more confusing
right.
too.
But they can get your catalog or go online
and
pull this up and
right.
use this. I think this would be a perfect reference
right.
sheet for any.
Lots of times manufacturers that you know make polish, they know that maybe they don't even have pads in their line. They may recommend a foam. Use this black foam or use this yellow foam.
Okay.
So you can read the bottle.
Okay.
And then you come back and look at our line and say, oh yeah, that's the right foam that they're
okay.
talking about.
Yeah, because and it's even getting more crazy because everyone used to use a really stiff foam with a cutting compound,
mm-hmm.
but then there's been companies that come out with a really hard foam pad with a really light polish to
right.
do, you know, on these really hard clear coats or something like that. So it's almost like you just gotta test it yourself.
Right. Well, you do to.
Yeah.
That's why these companies come up with systems.
Right.
With polish pads, and they try to put together a system they know works.
Right.
So since we're not a polish manufacturer,
right.
we can't do that. We just offer a big spread.
Right. Sergio asked, will they make a hybrid wool foam pad?
At some point.
Okay.
At some point, we're always looking at new opportunities.
So what would be the benefit to a wool foam pad?
Well, I'm not sure exactly if he's talking about the knitted pile.
Okay.
Knitted pile
and
cutting pad.
Doesn't say.
With the foam on the back.
I don't know.
That's a cushion.
Okay.
So what they'll do Interesting. Is instead of this,
it would look similar to that though.
On the front, yeah.
Okay.
I think that's what he's talking about.
But then wouldn't it pretty much just be a microfiber pad?
Well, it would probably give you a quicker cut.
Okay.
With wool. Hmm. It depends. I mean, sometimes the paints are different. You get different results with different pads sure. and different polishes and different combinations. And
right.
There's more than one answer.
Yeah.
To making a nice finish. I mean, there's a lot of companies doing it different ways, and
right.
the products are completely different, and the finish is great.
Jeremiah asked about the smaller pads, like 1 inch or 3 inch for the new Eurotech, but right. we talked about that.
Right.
Let me see what else we got going here. Steven asks, is there a special technique for using microfiber pads? Because he can't seem to get on with them. Prime them good to start. They just seem to flatten out and clog real quick.
Well, they need to use a brush to clean them to keep the pile up. It is gonna load. It's gonna go flat if you just never check the pad.
Right.
Check the pad.
Okay. So maybe panel by panel, and don't overload it.
Don't get it saturated.
Liquid. Okay.
If it gets too saturated, you probably want to wash it and get a dry one, and you know keep it. You want to keep, it's like a wool pad too. You don't want to oversaturate a wool pad.
Right.
Same thing with this. It's a fiber. It's going to absorb. You want to try to keep it semi dry. If it's okay. just loaded, it's just going to lay down.
Right. Evan asks, is there a right pad for the right buffer? But we kind of touched on this. What pads should and shouldn't be used on certain buffers? So maybe is there a few examples of like definitely don't use, like we talked about before, the bigger stroke machines are getting their own specific pads pretty much, right?
Well, the longer stroke machines are getting their own specific pads for a number of reasons. One is the foam has to be super durable to handle the side stress.
Mm.
If it's not, it's going to fall apart. And then the other thing is the pads have to be the right weight. One of the beautiful things about a long throw machine is how smooth it runs. But if you put a foam pad on there that's too heavy,
okay.
Which is annoying. It's not good for the machine. So the Eurotech line, the Eurocell line,
mm-hmm.
those foams are weighted just right, cut to the right thickness, cut to the right diameter to give you the right weight so that when the machine runs it, mm-hmm. you can really feel the pad on there.
Last one from Christopher. What to look for when finding a good quality pad?
That logo right there. That says yeah,
that's right. Great, that's beautiful.
29 years of experience in that's right. manufacturing pads.
And even more than that, probably, if you add in all the years of experience for your dad and
as a kid, yes.
As a kid and all that, that's awesome. So if people want to, who's your, like, ideal customer? What type of customers are you looking for? Are you looking for people that may be interested in distributing your pads, just want to use your pads, or everyone?
Well, we only sell through distribution. Okay. We don't sell to the public, but
okay.
We need to protect our distributors.
Sure.
We are looking for more distributors,
okay.
You know, anywhere. We sell international.
Okay.
We do shows overseas. We sell in the United States.
So how would one, say someone's listening and they're like, you know what, everything I've heard today is great, or they just, for whatever reason, they want to become a distributor of Buff and Shine pads. How do they do that?
They can contact us through sales@buffandshine.com.
Okay.
That's an email that we would pick up for, you know, any potential distributor can start there.
Okay.
They can contact Julio. We have an international sales manager if it's international. I'd start with sales@buffandshine.com.
Perfect. And they can check out your whole line at buffandshine.com.
That's correct.
Anything else that we didn't talk about that you want to make sure we cover?
No, not really.
Okay. I appreciate you taking the time. I think we nailed it.
We did. We talked about a lot of stuff.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Auto Detailing Podcast. Head on over to autodetailingpodcast.com for full show notes and links of everything that we've talked about today. And don't forget to check out our resources page for a direct link to all the products talked about not only on today's episode, but that I use in my day-to-day detail business. They have direct links so you can purchase and get free shipping right from that page. That's autodetailingpodcast.com. We'll see you on the next episode.